Today's show is sponsored by our presenting sponsor, Cufflinks.com. Just like every show, baby, go to Cufflinks.com/DVR today and use code DVR20 to save 20% off your order. No minimum. They got pocket squares, ties, socks, cufflinks. Of course, they got cufflinks. So much awesome stuff over at Cufflinks.com. Go check it out. If you're a fan of football, basketball, baseball, NCAA, NFL, Major League Baseball, hockey, Star Wars, DC, Marvel, Game of Thrones. They got new Joker stuff for the Joker movie, Aladdin, Disney, everything you want. Cufflinks.com has it. And this is high quality wearable art. Look good when you step out in the morning. Elevate your style. Go to Cufflinks.com/DVR today. Welcome back to Daily DVR. Today is Friday, September 6th. I've got a great show for you today. A couple weeks ago, I had the great opportunity to be a guest again on Resisting Gilead. This is a podcast that was started by Gina. Gina is a longtime listener, patron, friend, and she went out and took a class, got the equipment, and started a podcast. She had an idea. She followed through with it. She covered the entire season of Handmaid's Tale, season 3 on Hulu. I was on for, I believe it was episode 3 and this finale episode. I loved this season. I had a fantastic time talking to Gina, so I wanted to give it some time to be on her feed and then put it on this feed. And hopefully it'll give other people an opportunity to listen and go out and subscribe to the entire season. Gina is fantastic. She added some personal stories to this, talked about the real world in relationship to Handmaid's Tale. And this was just a spectacular season. And I was really, really happy and honored and had a blast talking to her about this finale. And I'm just really happy that she was able to just do this and make a podcast, and it was just awesome. I enjoyed following along with her the entire season. So here is myself and Gina talking about the finale of season 3 of The Handmaid's Tale on Hulu. I hope Gina will be back for season 4, because if she comes back, I'll come back and definitely be a guest again. Go out and subscribe to Resisting Gilead. And if you like this, leave her a review, rate, subscribe, give some stars, all that kind of groovy stuff. We all do appreciate that. I hope you enjoy. Thanks for listening. And thank you, Gina, for having me on. And congratulations for your first season as a podcaster. It's official, baby. All right. Enjoy Resisting Gilead.
The girl has to go home.
So that she can get married off at 14? I am not doing that. I am not sending her back so that she can get raped and maimed in this insane fucking world that you helped build.
She's a commander's daughter. She'll be protected.
So she's not gonna get her clit cut off? When she falls in love.
Hello, this is Gina, and welcome to the latest episode of Resisting Gilead. This week on Resisting Gilead, we are discussing the season finale, Season 3, Episode 13, titled May Day. And with me today, I have got W. Axel Foley, who is the fearless leader of the Daily DVR Podcasting Network. How are you doing today, Axel?
I am doing fantastic, Gina. I want to congratulate you on this season of Resisting Gilead. I've been listening along. And you've done fantastic, all the great guests you've had. I'm really happy to be back with you.
I'm happy to have you back as well. And thank you so much for the words of praise. And, you know, I feel like some people, it's taking them a while to get through the show. I had a friend last night who over Facebook is like, I just started listening to your podcast and I love it. And I'm like, oh, awesome. So, you know, it's nice that these things are out there for when people are ready to watch the show, they've got a podcast to listen to as well.
Yeah. Well, you know what the thing is? They last forever.
And they do.
Podcast is evergreen, just like it's on Hulu. And in 3 years, somebody's going to reach the season and they're going to be, oh, what's this? And they're going to listen to the pod. I just got a message from somebody yesterday on Twitter saying, hey, are your old Lost Mythos podcasts from 2009 available? And I was like, yep, go over here. So
that's awesome. That is awesome. Well, cool. So quite an episode, don't you think? I mean, I don't know. Even from the beginning, just I thought it was really interesting the way they started at the very beginning when she was being penned up. And they were herding together, all the women. And I don't know if you noticed it, and I don't think I would have noticed it, but I recently looked up the actress that plays Brianna, one of the handmaids. And in real life, she has huge hair. Like, you would never know under that costume, because we've never seen her without her cap. But in this whole cattle herding, we see June look back at one point, and there's Brianna with huge hair. And I was just like, it's so interesting how they were all being herded up together at the same time. And
yeah,
just so crazy. And it was crazy to see how they were, I think they were immediately slaughtering the women who were crippled or who had Down syndrome. I don't know that they're taking them to Connelly's.
It looked like either, it just was so reminiscent of Nazi Germany and Poland, you know,
yes.
Just so reminiscent of that, of separating people based upon their worth to the institution. And those who did not have any worth looked like were going to be killed. And then it looked like it was weird, because it was like they showed you different parts. And then one, you'd hear kind of screams. They were just pushing them. And then another one, it looked like there were people that were also a bit maybe less disabled that were being showered down. And maybe I saw that wrong, but it looked like enough to show that it was an assembly line.
Yeah.
You know, assembly line of human. It was absolutely horrific. And I mean, Elizabeth Moss, always the face, the eyes.
Yeah.
Just doesn't stop. And I thought that this was in a fantastic way to start off the episode, because it reminds us of what she had been communicating throughout the season, which is what was going to happen. It was because the society had now been kind of accepted, right? And it was what the world they now lived in. It eliminated this idea of what was, of being able to see what was going to happen to the little girls, right?
Yeah.
It obscured the fact that they would then grow, that even if you were a rich parent, a powerful, you could end up a handmaiden, right? That was a handmaid. That's the point. That's what you are to this society. And by starting off by showing what it was like in the beginning when it was dirty and they were processing, right? It was really remarkable. And it brought me right into the mood of, holy crap, this is like all the little girls that she's trying to save. That's what we're looking at.
Yeah. And you have to realize that a lot of these women that were being rounded up too were already mothers, and they had their children ripped away from them. You know, that was the first thing she was asking, you know, that guard, is they took my daughter. What, you know, where is she? And we see her in there with Janine as well, who we know had a son. And yeah, I mean, I think there was, in that whole scene, at one point you're looking at a room full of women. There are like maybe four or five that were naked, and it looked like they were being examined. And so it's
what I was talking about.
I didn't think of it as much as being showered down as
I think I was wrong. You're right. They were like being looked at and like,
yeah, it's like, like how close are you to like, oh, we don't have any records on you. We're going to check your fertility and, you know, try and figure out how old you are and where, if you make the cut for Handmaid or Martha or Colonies, like it's just really, it's very, this whole season has had very strange echoes of World War II from, I think, a lot of the set work we had, especially when we were in Washington, D.C. and, you know, certain kind of political events were happening, to even like I was feeling like Sound of Music flashbacks in one place, which, you know, as light as that show is, it's really, you know, kind of offset by them escaping the Nazis in the end. So there's been a lot of very strange echoes of World War II this season.
It's been a while since we chatted and episodes have gone by, and what an amazing season. But you're absolutely right, and this is a culmination of that in many ways, and you get to see it. And I think that was really important, because the word I was looking for was, and a word we talk about a lot today, is normalization, right? Like, once the system is in place and you have everyone wearing their clothes and using the speech, it's normalized. And then the idea that when it started, they were rounding up the women like this and putting people in cages and right out in public, like other people could see it, you know, and ferreting them off. And now that the children are just regular children, and instead of being treated like that, they'll just come up through the system. And that's what the Nazis wanted, right?
Yeah.
That's why all the pageantry and the clothes and the speech, why everything is codified, because it normalizes it. And then you think, well, that's life. And yeah. I just thought that was so brilliant to start this episode like that, because you know what? This show is so great with flashing back to little things. Like we had the Aunt Lydia flashback earlier in the season, right?
Yeah.
I think that was John. You and John talked about that, right?
Tim.
Tim.
Yeah.
You and Tim talked about that. It was a great episode. Both the episode and you and Tim. And it's like, what do they have left? You know, like when it first started, I was like, wait, oh my God, now they're flashing back to like a couple hours after they captured her.
Yeah.
Because we had seen when she meets Aunt Lydia, but we hadn't seen like the initial ferreting out of where she's going to go, and to break it down to such minute detail also shows the systemization of this horror. And that is even more terrible.
Well, and I think if we're, let's talk about the normalization of the language and the systemization, it comes up throughout this whole episode. You know, we see it with, I think, Serena at one point, where she was talking to Mark Tuello, was using still Gilead phrasing. And then even Rita, when she gets off the plane, is still using Gilead terminology, because it's become such second nature to them. And, you know, even June and I guess it was Beth and Sienna, when they're getting things ready in the kitchen and Commander Waterford's there, you know, June is still using the terminology, but she's using it with tone. You know, it's like she's not saying what she really thinks, but she's like, yeah, blessed day, go to your office. You know, it was just kind of, you know, it's interesting how it's not only normalized, now it's even like in some households, maybe kind of evolving with tone.
I like that. That's so smart. And that's like a sociologist could study that, right? Like developing their own slang, right? And intonations. And she is, we see how she is almost like a kind of a thought leader in this, you know, right?
Yeah.
Like she kind of people follow that. And you see like the other handmaids pick up on it, or, you know, so that's really cool.
No, they've done a really good job at world building and how a world, I think also demonstrating how a world can change so very quickly. And that's even, even Serena was saying, oh, I'm going to be able to go out without an escort. And, how they somehow forgive Serena for all the crimes she participated in because they were initially under the laws of Gilead. I mean, it's just, it is the whole thing is very interesting how they've positioned it. But So after the catacall, there's the big dance of the soap exchanges, which at first I'm like, what is happening here? Which, it was really well choreographed, I think, until, Aunt Lydia starts sniffing something out because Janine just can't act normally. But I love that just very brief exchange between June and Aunt Lydia, which was like, she's like, that they look up to you. You wouldn't do anything that would put them in harm's way. And, it was just like, oh, Aunt
I've never
Lydia.
done anything like that before.
I know. Oh, Aunt Lydia, you have no effing idea what's coming down.
Right? Like, I mean, there is the soap thing I thought was really cool. Whenever they do that in a film or a television show and they show this kind of quiet unity, I always find that to be very powerful. It's like people singing together or something, like people taking a small action and this soap too made me think of Fight Club, and there's
Ooh.
aspects of that to it. And then when you go further into that, there's the aspects of Nazi Germany as well. And like in the weird Fight Club, there was kind of like a alt-right side to Fight Club of all that. Now, I don't need to get into all of that, but anyway, there's always everything in this show you can kind of go deeper into. But yeah, I thought that was cool. And the Aunt Lydia part too, that was interesting for me because when I rewatched, I was like, this is the only time she kind of pops up, right in this episode.
Definitely.
And after what we've seen of her this season and the journey that she's gone through, what does it say that that's what she does? And to me, I almost feel as though she knew what was going on. It's not a total theory. I don't have any other stronger indications that she's completely complicit, but I feel like Gilead is crumbling. And I feel like part of what this episode showed us this season, we've gone really wider than we ever have before, but we've also gone smaller and tighter than we've ever gone before. And I feel like the wider part in this episode was concentrated so much on what was going on with Serena and Fred, but we were getting glimpses of phone calls, right, with Lawrence of what was, oh, you're gonna bomb, you're gonna do this, right? Like all what was going on. And you had mentioned in the last episode the aspect of him becoming more powerful because his wife was gone.
Yeah, I mean that, well, because his wife was gone, but also because Fred and Serena had been captured, and I think Fred
Yes.
had a lot of
Exactly.
power. And then, of course, June totally took out High Commander Winslow.
Right.
And, it hasn't been confirmed that he was the top dog, but it kind of seems like he was because all of a sudden, even though Lawrence had, a big hand in the creation of this and a high command as well, he seems to have become so much more involved
Yes, and it
with
was
the
his
command.
wife was pulling him out of that. It was as though they all had this reverence for him, and even when they made he and June, I mean, that was a rape. That was like a state sanctioned rape, even though he didn't want to do it too, right? And she, in a sense, wanted to save his life so she could use him, which was the smart thing to do in that sense. But that was, man, that was like the toughest thing of the season for me.
Yeah. Well, I mean, she saved the whole household's
Yeah.
lives, right? When it came down to
She
it would
did.
have been all of them.
She got, God, the Waterfords, my God, they're just like the worst people ever invented. But long story short is what I'm trying to say, Gina, is I think there's been a little bit of critical, and I've seen a couple articles written, and I've seen some people talking, and I even felt as I was watching it, bringing up the kind of June plot armor that she kind of is getting thing, even with Aunt Lydia or whatever. And I wanted to posit that I think the show's smarter than that. And I think even though it is dramatic and she survives in certain ways that maybe she wouldn't, we're watching a television show, I think there, Gilead is crumbling and people like Aunt Lydia are allowing things to happen because they want it to crumble. They want to save it because they have this connection to their faith, but that also that connection is making them question the very basis of the dysfunction of this society.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think that Lydia knew what was happening. I think she knew something was up. Yes. I don't think she knew
specifically. Yeah, that's what I mean. She wasn't complicit, but she knew something was up. She's just going to let it. Like when she said that to her, I almost felt like she was saying, I know you're up to something, but you know what? Maybe I'm going to let you do it.
Yeah. I mean, I think even Aunt Lydia's had some interesting moves this season. You know, she has gone out of her way to protect June time after time, even after she said you should be on the wall for, you know, trying to take back your daughter. She has worked to protect her in a way. She's worked to protect Janine, even after she like beat the crap out of her. You know, she got her that eye patch, which, you know, I think it is definitely a little bit of breaking the law. And, you know, it was questioned. And I think that scene between Lydia and June, when they were talking about the, silencing the handmaids, I think was pretty powerful too. So I think it definitely has her questioning and yeah, maybe she's, I don't know, maybe she's willing to make some, let some things slide. But at the same time, I think, I don't know, probably more to come next season. She's going to have more decisions to make as time goes on. And we can talk about, you know, kind of predictions for next season at the end, but yeah, it's definitely starting to crumble. I mean, clearly there's a super strong network of resistance running through this.
And June has energized everything, you know? I think that's like, I've been watching with my wife another political tinge show. Not tinge, it's a lot about it. Years and Years.
I started watching that and then I stopped because I'm like, I can't watch this The Handmaid's Tale at the same time, because in some ways I feel like Years and Years is even in a different way closer to like reality, which is frightening. So let's talk about Serena and Fred a little bit and then just leave them behind, because I think it's pretty like, I want to get to the meat of it, but I don't want to miss anything either. But I don't know. I was just like, Serena and these visitations with the baby and like her getting to like traipse about the city on her own. She really is very conniving. She's very strategic and conniving. It's like, I mean, she's always, there's never any doubt she was smart, but I think it's just like, I don't know. It's really kind of shown itself in an even more disgusting light, that it's not even like she's part of Gilead, but she's still just maneuvering the heck out of her situation.
Yeah. And I feel like, part of this is that the Canadian representative, what's his name again?
Mark Tuello.
Okay. Mark Tuello. He is like falling for her.
I agree. I'm like, is he sweet on her? Like,
He's got a little bit of a hero. Yeah, I think so. I think he's got a little bit of a hero complex here. And I know, I remember there's been so few scenes where he's opened up, but I remember there was a scene where he opened up and I got the feeling that that's what he was getting, like this kind of hero complex, that he was going to save her in some way, or that he wanted to believe that. And I think really what the theme with him and her is the overall kind of question of her being complicit, and when does responsibility begin, and being a victim of the institution end, right?
Yeah.
And with Serena, that's the ultimate question. And he embodies a person who comes from the perspective, unlike June and the other women we see in Gilead, he represents the perspective of someone who actually takes the more empathetic view first.
Right, that even the wives are victims
yes,
in this society.
Right.
You know, they can't read, they can't write. She was this author and, you know, had a voice and... Yeah.
So that's interesting to me because it's like he just sees it as, look, this is a society based completely on the subjugation of women. Like that's the basis of it, right? So she is a victim of this, but he soon learns that she's not. I found that distinction that they make to be pretty interesting as well.
Well, I did too. And it was like, it was kind of great when like, I mean, Fred is just Mr. Smug all the time. So bothered about being interviewed and complaining about the woman because she's so thorough. I'm just like, oh dude, you really are a piece of work. But I think what was so interesting is then Fred kind of goes in, oh yeah, I've been looking at your law library here. And you kind of know like, okay, Fred specifically went into that law library looking for a way he could nail Serena, and he found it. And, you know, the fact that she was so desperate for a baby, she convinces, I mean, saying forced is one thing, you know, she convinces Nick to, you know, have sex with June in hopes that, you know, she'll get pregnant because she wants a baby so badly. And I mean, you know, in some ways too, like it's not like the handmaid can say no in any situation, right?
Is rape. And I thought that was a powerful point when Serena was like, she didn't understand the difference, right? Like she was like, but I already admitted that we went in this ceremony, but within the confines of the ceremony, she is the wife and he is the and Commander Waterford is in power, right?
Yeah. So
covers the plea, but her forcing the handmaid to have sex with someone else constitutes state sanctioned rape.
Yeah.
And she is the one who's in power at that point. And I thought that distinction was really interesting to me, that they made that distinction, but that also it was Twello who says to her, that's rape.
Yeah. And he was so disappointed. Yeah. And that's when I was like, yeah, he's definitely sweet on her. No yeah. more pizza and newspapers for you, Serena Joy.
No more newspapers, right? Like he really did have that. That was really interesting. And he's great. I loved him on Parenthood.
Yeah.
But that was really interesting. But also, doesn't it kind of piss you off, Gina, that frickin' Fred got his way again? That like, I mean, I'm happy that Serena is not being allowed to go prance around and that she's going to be made to there's going to be justice, hopefully, for the crime she's committed. But the fact that it was Fred who gets a one-up on her is kind of still annoying.
Well, yes and no. I mean, first of all, he could have let a couple other things go as well, which was Serena was reading and writing and signing Fred's name to a lot of Gilead paperwork.
That
may come out. But then also, what about that rape where she is pregnant and there is no need for a ceremony? And that was 100% Serena's idea. Yeah.
That was. Oh, and how about how she forced her to, she did it again. She forced her to have sex with Lawrence.
Well,
that was in a sense she went along. Well, you're right. That was not, that came more from what, but I feel like behind the scenes, she was pushing for that too. There was a scene previously when they discuss it. And if I remember correctly, she wasn't against it.
Right. But it's still, it was more about making sure they were upholding the laws of Gilead. True. So it's a very, I know, it's a very gray line, but
it's so sick, right? It's yeah. like we but, end up kind of defining it by that way too. You know, it's a lot to think about.
But I mean, being outraged that Fred got the one up on her. I mean, in some ways I'm not, because this couple deserves everything they have coming to him. And do you remember last season where June is hiding out in that house and the Waterfords come in and they just have like this vicious fight and he's like, good, I hope we hang on the wall together. Yeah. But, you know, and so I feel like he is totally, if I go down, you're going down with me. There's not going to be any way around this.
Yeah.
Which is just, you know, they've always been at odds. I don't even understand how they became a couple in the first place, really, because it just seems like they've been at odds this whole time.
Well, I guess at one time that was the fire, you know, they had this same passion too.
Yeah.
You know, I if there's, and you know, I don't want to jump ahead too much prediction, but I would like to see more of their beginnings and the beginning of Gilead too. Like if we're headed towards an end, hopefully, I'd like to see more of how, because we have those couple episodes that speak of how she did a lot of the initial writing and then became kind of the poster child for
it. Yeah, she wrote that kind of manifesto.
So it's always been really interesting to me.
Yeah. I mean, and it'd be interesting to really see kind of like, because I have this weird theory that Commander Lawrence was just kind of like, oh, you want an idea? Here's an idea, because he tends to be so flip about things sometimes. Yeah. You know, I'd like to kind of see, yeah, it'd be interesting to see more of the beginning and how they put it together. And I'd like, even like to see more of kind of Nick's role in the beginning. Like supposedly he led what they actually call the Crusades, which is a religious war.
Yeah.
We know how he got recruited, but I don't think we ever really saw how he, you know, we've never seen him in battle and we never saw him again for the rest of the season, which is interesting.
Huh. That's true.
Let's talk about Jude and Joseph a little bit and, you know, his master plan, which was super interesting. But I mean, these two are like screen gold together. They're both so good. And I read an article recently that interviewed Bradley Whitford. It was after the horrible episode where they have to do the ceremony. And he talked about that and just how he thought it was like so disturbing and yet some of the best writing he's ever seen, because here she is walking him through what he has to do and like how he can get through it psychologically, which was horrible. But he just gave Elizabeth Moss some super props, just saying, you know, I met her when she was like a teenager on the West Wing and was like this great kid. And now I feel like, you know, she's teaching me about acting. Like their scenes are just like so intense and amazing. And I don't know. I mean, he's just been, I think, a super brilliant addition to this cast, and the way the two of them play off each other and interact has just been so awesome. Like every scene between them has just been so amazing or interesting or crunchy in just like the deepest way, in my opinion, this year.
Oh, I totally agree. And I think that if they were not such great actors, a lot of it would not work. You know, it's a lot of trust on them, or they would have to overwrite the scenes where they're explaining the dynamic instead of letting it play out. And the way in which things turned after that ceremony, and his wife too. And you mentioned in a last episode that you thought that maybe he suspected her when he kind of looked at her at the end of the episode at the funeral.
Well, I mean, I think it's very...
I agree. I
yeah. I mean, yeah, it's super difficult. Yeah, it is a trust thing. And, you know, I mean, June actually kind of gave a tell, which was like, I could have gone and checked on her as well. You know, maybe thinks, oh, maybe you did. Or maybe you should have, because you'd grown close to Eleanor and, you know, I trusted you to look after her more. You know, but I thought like the real thing that kind of just made my insides crunch was when she said something about, oh, you got them to keep the borders open. And he goes, oh yeah, no one's going to disagree with a man in mourning. And I'm like, I just thought that cannot have been her real motivation for letting this happen. Like, how can you think ahead to the fact that they're going to feel so sorry for him? They're not going to put up a fuss because his wife died. I don't know. I just never would have thought that way.
I'm
not in June's position either.
Yeah. And this is a question you were asking. I think, okay, I don't know that in the moment. I think it's more like this. I should let her die because she's going to ruin the plan. But if I let her die, is that going to ruin the plan?
Well, right? I mean, yeah, it could have went either way.
And then she just kind of trusted, no, wait, he's still going to be in power. This is a male dominated society. The loss of his wife, who everyone knew was crazy, might actually benefit it. They need someone in power, right? She took out the leader, and then Waterford's out. So I kind of think that she did think that far ahead. I really do. And I think that the way that she played him and saw from the very beginning how he was really subservient to his wife, and that she could play into that and twist him and twist his guilt, was masterful. And the way he as an actor played it too, not giving it away too much, staying angry. And that last scene with the gun was, whoa, that was really, they're both going to win an Emmy for that, because that scene alone was absolutely masterful. And it just spoke so much to how she didn't need to have that gun. The gun became not really even a part of the scene by the end. You could see that she just had the power over him.
It's not your decision. Men. Fucking pathological. You are not in charge. I am. So, go to your office and find me a fucking map. Thank you.
You're still in my house. My house, young lady.
You really think this is still your house?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, definitely. And I honestly don't think he was threatened by the gun. I mean, she had saved his life before.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. Yeah.
And I think, you know, he threatened to pull the plug, and you know, I think he's clearly been in control of the relationship with his wife for so long, just because she has not been mentally well. And during this episode, at one point, June says, maybe you've forgotten what a strong woman looks like, because, yeah, you know, Eleanor was so fragile. And there is a moment where he's watching these, you know, three women in his kitchen move about with such purpose and command that he almost seems bewildered, right? Like he didn't realize these guys were so capable. And so I feel like this has kind of been, you know, that scene between them, it really is, I think, an important realization for him that look at what he did to create the society and look how it's turned out. And maybe he's not as smart and capable and brilliant as he thought, as everyone told him he was. And then look at these women that have been basically silenced and raped and tortured and everything else. Look at them activate and look at what June's pulling together. I mean, you know, he knows she can kill a man for sure. But it was a really kind of interesting battle of the wills. And I just like, there was like kind of a couple of different parts to that scene. And the first part is where she's just like kind of beaten down a little bit because she put the gun in the kid's face because she was just so like, this has to happen. But then at the end, it's like, she's like, you really still think this is your house? Was so brilliant.
And it really, it never was, right? Like that's, isn't that kind of the secret to power dynamics where the person in power is really reliant on the submissive to have power, right? There is no relationship. One is dependent on the other. So it can be flipped. And she did it through will, right? And determination. And that's what so much of this episode is about. She is determined for this to happen. And she is not going to let what has happened so many times in this show before too, right? How many times have they had to play, oh, we can't do it, or she has to kind of in some way settle.
Yeah.
She's made the decision on this day, no more. That's it.
Well, and I mean, it's almost like in a very strange way, I do honestly think that he likes her, but I also think it's a couple of different things. She learned how to play a commander. That was the best thing about her being at the Waterfords. She learned how to play that guy. Yep. And she has done the same thing with Joseph in a way. I feel like she's done it much more honestly just because of the person he is. And he's more intellectual in a way. But I also feel like he has forced her to challenge herself and what she's capable of. Because, you know, like at the beginning of the season, oh, you're useless, you know. And it kind of like, oh, fetch me that book in my library. Like, he definitely, like, poked at her. It's like, make this decision if you think making decisions is so easy. You know, pick five. That's what you get, you know, of those Marthas. And it's almost like, it's really weird, but he was so essential in grooming her to get to this point as well, whether he intended to or not.
Yeah. I can see that. And I think that, though, I also think that when he was saying those things, it was apparent to her that he was speaking to himself. You know, he's such a self-hating person and he knows what he created and that guilt that he has inside. And I think, though, you're right too, that he knew what he was getting, right? I mean, obviously, when she came there, and he did want her, he wanted all this to happen.
Yeah, you know, I think he did.
Lydia, it's a strange psychology, isn't it? People who are delusioned with, like, you know, in cultish states like this, that they often reach out for the opposite or act out in ways that are completely against what they speak of, you know? And I think that, in a sense, you're right, that he, like, helped her towards this and pushed her towards this, and different ways that, you know, kind of like, if it doesn't kill you, it makes you stronger type of thing.
Yeah.
I felt he was doing that. Not that I agree with his actions, but that he kind of felt he was kind of building her up almost in a way that he couldn't his own wife, you know, like he couldn't save her. So he can kind of save people and herself.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's their relationship's super interesting. I hope that we get to see him again next season.
Me too. I think we will. I think we definitely will.
I think we will too. So,
all right.
Let's talk about May Day. So I kind of love how it begins flawed because it's broad daylight. June's out. Now we know what the soap is for. She's greasing the gate with it, which I thought was really weird. But I guess you've got to get
it's somewhere. Nice
at first, she's like melting down. I'm like, is she going to make some kind of bomb? It wasn't that interesting. But she's greasing down the gate and she sees this little girl in the woods whose name is Kiki, and she's with her Martha. And, you know, we see her dressing a pretty nasty blister on that kid's foot. And it's because she's walked from Lexington to Boston, which is approximately 13 miles.
Ooh,
wow. It's about the distance of a half marathon, 13.4, a little more. I don't know, that first little, you know, she and June have this really nice exchange about what it's going to be like, you know, when she's out of Gilead, and she does this little prayer, which was the first thing that put me in tears in this episode. And I think, like, I probably have only cried like two or three times during this whole series up to this point.
Oh, okay.
I guess it was just last season, really. There are a couple times, but I don't know. I was really a wreck during this episode for most of it. I marked every single time the second time I watched it because I cried again. It didn't matter. You know, unfortunately, the kids, Martha freaks out and she goes after her with the gun and turns around and, you know, the guns in the poor kid's face. And I don't know, it's a pretty rough beginning to this. And of course, you know, that's why Lawrence wants to call the whole thing off, and June talks him down. But it, you know, they decide that you know, Sienna, who is the handmaid that you know, basically fought her way into this episode, which was interesting. She's like, it fairly said, you know, 10 words the whole season, but, you know, she's just like, I can help, you know, I'm smart. I was going to be a radiologist.
It's like that idea of the inspiring, right? Like, you need setting the candle or the soap, right? Like, it catches fire.
Yeah.
And attitude. You just need to have you know, it's like, I am Spartacus. You need to have the attitude, and she, the kid, right? And then other people start picking up. Even the woman who she initially, the Martha who initially wants to run away and take the kid back, she isn't that the same one who ends up killing, or she drugged them again and stole the baby and came back with the baby?
No.
Was that the same one, or was it a different one?
No, that was a different one because... Oh, okay.
That's confused me because I was thinking like, wow, she's inspiring everyone. Like, that woman really, like, she bounced back from it. She was, you know, because she went running off like she was going to tell or something. But then I thought that was her that came back later. I guess not.
Yeah, no, unfortunately. And that's what we find out. So Sienna comes up with that idea that they can walk to the airport along this trail that's along the river, because it's only a few miles. But, you know, when they get back to the house and Commander Lawrence is reading to all the kids, I was just like, oh my gosh. And what's so sad about that is, like, have any of these kids ever been read aloud to, really? Because it has to be a man that can read to them. It can't be their quote-unquote moms, whoever they were assigned to. It can't be their Marthas.
And you think you wouldn't want to read to them because that encourages them to read.
Yeah, right? Like, and to think.
Exactly. So you think it would be more of bedtime is your prayers.
Yeah.
Of the day, and you go to sleep. Reading is not a part of this society.
You know?
to encourage that. So that was so powerful, and also powerful in the sense of the character too, how he and his wife didn't have children. And then he's kind of like, you know, sitting here reading to all these children, but then also he's responsible for their bondage. You know, yeah. It was thick in a way. It's man, this show never just presents a scene with one reading possible. There's always multiple readings in depth. And even the way this was shot, I mean, like, listen, it was like kind of candlelight. And it was just, I mean, it was absolutely beautiful. And the way Elizabeth Moss reacts to it, she's so scared at first. And so was I. I was like, where is everybody? Yeah. You know? I initially thought that he had shepherded everyone away and it had the whole thing had happened without a scene. I thought they were going to play us like that. Like she was going to just be there. And then night was going to become day. And then he was going to walk back in the room and just be like, it's done. They're safe. Hmm. But obviously that's not what happened.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I love that scene, and he seemed to be a natural reading with those kids. It was so sweet, and you know, I think they walk in and Rita's like, "This is more than 52 kids," and maybe next season we'll get the count on exactly how many there were. But I'm like, I don't know, 75, 100.
I think that there were. I think it was at least double.
Yeah, but it was. At that point when he was reading, Janine shows up and she's the one that gives the news that the Martha that came with Kiki had been caught 2 miles from their house and that they were starting the door-to-door searches.
Okay, that's, yeah. See, it was confusing to me. I have to admit, Gina, I was not sure first when Lawrence said that, you know, we have to shut it down. I wasn't sure whether he was lying about them going house to house. I was like having heart palpitations this entire episode because I felt like the heist feeling, you know what I mean? Like
it's going down
and having been so disappointed by this show so many times
before,
you know, and not that I don't love the show, but its purpose is to disappoint. And I was just preparing for it. And I was like, even in my mind, I was like, am I really going to let them do this to me again? Am I really going to believe this is going to go right?
Yeah.
No, I'm not.
Well, so I mean,
I lost some of the details. So thank you for clearing that up.
Well, and it's hard because I mean, all of them are dressed alike, right? You can't really tell too many apart unless you've known them as a character more meaningfully than, you know, one scene. But I think when Lawrence wanted to shut it down, he's just like, oh, you know, a Martha and a girl were spotted near Lexington. Like it wasn't even, you know, door to door at that point.
Okay. So, right. So there was some sort, there was a little bit of weirdness going on there. And I almost feel like, I don't know, like if I was making this, I would almost feel like that's good. That benefits us because what you want is the thing that just keeps on shining through is June just saying, no, we're doing this. Like yeah. Her fire, everything is confused. They found this. They're going door to door. She took out one and got a baby. She ran away. What's happened, right? Like, oh, where did they go? He's reading to them. Like everything seemed to reach this crescendo before she finally says, we got to go.
Yeah. Yeah. And that was kind of the thing that put it over the edge. And
then it's like became streamlined. Then it became like a Breaking Bad type, right? Like follow the pieces. We got to go through the woods. We got to follow the thing. So then it became a little clearer to me, but it was all such a frenzy that I wasn't sure whether because it was also like levels of, you know, it's like that in your normal life, right? Like if there's like a snowstorm or something, you're like, should I drive in it? Is it safe, right? So it's like, who makes the final call? And it was important for the show to show us that June is in charge here.
Yeah. No, yeah. She gets everyone out. you know, they start on their way, and seeing the, like just this whole group on the move. This was like the second time the show really got me, because it just reminded me of that. And this might have even been the first season where June and her mom had that scene, and her mom's like, "This is what you want to do with your life? Like, be a book editor and get married?" She goes, "You used to want to be on the Supreme Court." Like, you know, and her mom had been such a strong personality and an activist, I think was super disappointed in June. Like, that seemed really clear. And I just thought, man, her mom would be so freaking proud of her right now. Like, look at what her daughter is doing, like more than anyone has done up to this point. It was just, I got really, really emotional just thinking about that.
That's a great point. And guess what, Gina? You finally made me remember what I was thinking about with years and years.
Woohoo! Interjection. Okay. What was it?
You, and it's totally on point of what you're saying. I'm not going to distract from what you said, which is how special June is. When I was watching Years and Years, I said to my wife, you know, there's a, as we're watching it and everything happens to this family, there's a reason why we're following this family. Right. Mm-hmm. And I feel that way with Handmaid's Tale, because we had been talking, when I forgot what the hell I was talking about, we had been talking a little bit about plot armor and people complaining June gets through it all. Well, there's a reason why we're following her, right? Because she is our hero.
Yeah. And
her mom was right. She is something special. And we're all inside of us have the capability to be something special. That's what the show wants to tell us, right? But in particular, she is a momentous figure. And we see it in this episode.
Yeah, no, I mean, we really do. And it just continues to intensify as they're on the move. And that little girl, Kiki, at one point as they're walking, you know, June's holding her hand and clearly she's gotten over having a gun in her face, thank goodness. But she's just looking up at June most of the time with this look of awe on her face. And I'm like, this kid is going to get out and she's always going to remember June no matter what happens. And this is shaping her life moving forward. Like, that was just so clear to me. So it's even like June's going to inspire this whole group of kids. Not just the people that are still stuck in Gilead that want to get out, you know, and then, and that kid knows it too. She says something like, "I'm sorry, this has been so hard." And the little girl's just like, "Sometimes you've got to do the things that you've got to do." And, you know, I think June had already made that decision that like, okay, this is going to be a suicide mission. I need to like put myself out there so these kids can get on that plane.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like Arya, you sometimes you just got to do it.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. Fly through the air and kill the Night King. Spoiler. But that's what we're reminded. You know, these shows are, there's a message here, you know?
Yeah.
Of what is power and what is determination and self-determination. And that simple line, you keep it moving, you have to do the things you have to do. That's, you know, this is the situation we're in, and you wallow in it or you keep moving, and you have to kind of, sometimes you do both, but in the end, if you want to survive, you got to keep moving.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, she goes over there to start throwing the rock on her own, and then all the rest of them join her, which cut, you know, kind of as a throwback to Aunt Lydia saying, you know, "You're very popular and these girls look up to you." And it's like, it's so much more than that. As you said, you know, she is inspiring. Yep. You know, she's a leader. And I loved kind of the fact that they're all throwing these big stones and rocks at this truck. And, you know, because, hey, if anyone knows how to stone something, it's these poor handmaids that, you know, have had to kill people time and time again is this really strange execution squad. And, you know, it's a lot easier to kill for something you believe in when you've been forced to kill for something that you don't.
Yeah, this scene was so powerful. And again, there's modern day political illusions within this of the throwing of the stones, right? Mm. There's callbacks in the show, what they've been forced to do before that they didn't want to do. And in this case, having, you know, doing it for to save these children and to protect themselves. And I was thinking at the time, you know, why doesn't June just take out the gun, circle around and shoot the guy, you know? But the truth is that this was actually a better plan, because I think if she had started shooting, they would have all been dead.
Yeah.
And the stones bespeak a different sort of fear, and it was surprising and shocking, but also something that this guard probably recognized, right, as part of their traditions that they've developed. So the more I thought about it, I was like, no, that wouldn't have been the fact that she saved the gun to the end was smart.
Yeah.
It was the only choice she had, because she didn't really know how to use it that well, right?
Right.
A lot of training or whatever. It was scary. It's scary. I mean, if somebody put a gun in my hand, I don't know how to use it. I'm not trained with guns, you know? And especially in this society. So I think that the stone thing was so powerful. And, you know, I'm not like a military strategic person, but he was behind the car. You know?
Yeah.
Had the car. So the stones created a sort of hitting the car and then bouncing off. It was a distraction as well. So actually, I thought this scene worked powerfully, metaphor as well as like realistically, it was a smart thing to do.
Yeah. And I think also with the stones, because it was so loud, it also like, that's the noise you're concentrating on. You're not concentrating on the fact that 100 kids are like going, you know, by you as quietly as they
can. Again, another great point.
Yeah.
Powerful. And then a couple of them get taken down, and that was just scary, but they kept on going, you know? And then he was like, the look on her face when she kind of realizes it's working, but she's scared. But then doesn't she kind of like smile a little bit there too?
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's gotta be like adrenaline. You're super scared, but it's also, you know, it's also a rush and thrilling that it is working and that these people have got your back, quite literally helping you do this. And I think that's when she realizes, okay, it's, you know, I think she sees a couple of the Marthas. It was hard to tell if, I feel like she was looking at Sienna, but I couldn't tell if Sienna was dead or alive. I think she was still alive, but then she kind of realizes, you know, I need to make sure these people get out okay. And that's when she goes over and gives Janine that, you know, kind of little kiss goodbye and says she's going to be okay, and walks into the light, and that guy starts trailing her and shooting at her. And all I could think of, Axel, was Game of Thrones and Rickon. And the arrow, and I was like, zigzag, zigzag, come on.
Well, it was great too, because like, he didn't want to shoot her. She's a handmaid, right? Like they're not, they've always shown they have sometimes been too harsh, but it's a weird thing, you know? So I don't think that he was particularly trying. He kept on trying to, I think it's just in the end, he was trying to shoot her.
Yeah. You know?
Well, I felt like that was realistic too. This whole thing was just staged so well, shot so well. When she stepped into the light like that, it was so powerful. And it was just, the cinematography on it was amazing. The sense of space that they were able to show you where everything was, I could like draw it out on a map. You know, where they were with the car, and then the kids were down there, and they went around the fence. They found an opening in the fence. It really, the whole thing just worked Breaking Bad style perfectly to me. And I loved it because I didn't have to worry about any of that stuff. You know, it seemed natural to me. And at the end, I mean, the coming out with the gun, even though I knew she had it, I was still surprised.
Yeah. I was surprised the first time. And then when she gets him to call off the guards, I was not surprised the second time, because she's like, thank you. And she seems so sweet. And then it's the look again, her like total like murderous bitch death face look. And she gets them. And I don't know. Did you get any lost flashbacks when she's on her back watching that plane go over her?
You're talking about tears. This, I had many tears. This, I'm an easy cry, but this really, especially, I cry more in things that are like, especially like power and free, like seeing people release from bondage in this way is like the most powerful thing to me. And that was so reminiscent of Lost. And they knew it too.
Yeah.
They knew it too. They moved the camera a little bit too, so it was a little floaty. They gave you a few seconds of it. I do think there was an homage in there. I mean, this is Lost. This is one of the greatest shows of all time. And it was absolutely amazing. That worked perfectly. And when she, I wasn't surprised when she shot him. And I think that plays very well into the next season and what happened when they come, when it's the handmaids that come and rescue her.
Yeah.
I think the fact that he's dead and there's no witnesses is something that is a great, important plot point moving forward. There's no evidence that any of them were involved in this.
Yeah. Yeah. You know?
So that he was really the evidence and she had to kill him.
Yeah. Yeah, she did.
Amazing.
Yeah, no, yeah, the flyover, I think that was the third time I cried.
Yeah, and the blood on the fit, when she pulls the trigger and it kind of comes back on her.
Yeah.
Who was so, man, they just, oh man, this episode was amazing.
Yeah, it was so, yeah, so good. And I feel like, okay, so I've watched this next scene probably 5 times because it's just so awesome, which is, that plane landed in Canada and our favorite people in Canada, Moira and Luke and Emily, all kind of, you know, waiting there. Like, we don't know what we're going to get. We don't know what's in here. And then when Moira goes up those stairs and that door opens and she sees all those kids, I like lost it again. I was just like, oh.
It's beautiful. And she is such an amazing actress. And the scene that she had last episode was so powerful, right? With the baby and to have her here. And there was a little bit of, I have to admit, I had a little bit of loss of the TV aspects, or I'm losing my train of thought again, but it lost me a little bit that they were all there. You know, it seemed a little bit convenient that they were all there waiting for it to happen. And it was all June that did it. But I think that it speaks again, that's who they are, right? And that's who the character of June is and the people around her. They're at the center of the change that is happening here. And it makes sense that they were there.
Yeah. Well, I do think that Moira, it kind of seems like she's been working with welcoming refugees anyway. Yeah, like, yeah, that's been her job. And you know, of course she gets her, you know, she makes Luke go along and I'm sure Emily's in on it. And yeah, I'm sure it was like kind of convenient, but I think it was also, you know, super necessary. And I mean, I love the fact that the first person that this girl Kiki sees is Moira. And it was like, it's this handoff from best friend to best friend of this child. You know, I'm the one that gets you on this plane. And like, there's no way June would know that Moira's going to be the first person to see this kid, but it's something just so beautiful and poetic that it was.
It was amazing. And just kind of you're thinking to yourself, did June's daughter make it? Were you thinking that at this point?
Like, you know, I think
episode two, I had it in the back of my mind, like, wait, is she there? But June is so focused. She's not letting herself, and then we're going to discover that she's there. But I like that she wasn't. Like that they didn't do that to us. And that, you know, because you could have gotten a little coda too, where June has something like a note in her hand, and as they lift her up, it falls out, and or it's a picture or something. You know what I mean? Like that she was waiting, but she just needed to focus on not herself.
Yeah. But, I mean, I never thought that was going to happen just because I think it's a big mystery where Hannah is now and no one seems to know at this point. And I think that's still going to be a big part of next season is finding her. But I mean, it was super heartbreaking when, you know, Moira's asking who we know as Kiki at this point, what her name is. And we hear this man say, Rebecca. And it was just like, I was not expecting that in any way. And it was just so gut-wrenching and such an amazing moment. And that's when you just really feel for Luke, because I'm like, there's no way Hannah's going to be on this plane. Yeah. And he gets to see this reunion between father and daughter, who's basically the same age Hannah is. And I mean, it was just like a gut punch. And then... God bless this woman, Rita. I love this actress too. I just think she's beautiful.
Such subtlety.
Yeah. And you know, she's bowing down and touching the ground because she's free. I mean, you know, it's like, and we don't really know her backstory. Like the only thing we know is she had a son that died in the war. We don't even know what side he really fought on.
And I saw you brought this up in the notes, and I said to myself, you know, you were talking about Nick before, and we're getting close to prediction part, but I will say that I think that that's going to play a part in the coming season. And I think that the fact that she's there is going to become important. And I think that she will definitely be a character that we stay with and that we see grow. And I've always been interested in seeing her outside of Gilead. I mean, I want them all outside, but in particular, she has such complexity to her. She's acted in so many different ways and now become an ally. And at certain points, we didn't know, you know, really how far it went. So yeah, you're right. This was great. And the part with Luke, when she says that June did this, that I was probably crying through this whole
thing. Yeah, totally.
That was so powerful. And it's just, but it's, you got to feel for Luke. Like, I just, you know, I put myself in his position and think, I mean, obviously, you know, I'm married, I got a young son, but I think to myself, if I was in this situation, then he's there. It's like, He keeps on having to hear these amazing things, right? Like, she did this, she's great, and then she did this too. But it's like, it doesn't add up to having her there with him.
Yeah, and yeah. I think that's, I mean, and I feel like this is almost like a political, like this is a huge political question mark of our time, right? We've got one party that's very focused on doing whatever they can for themselves. And then we've got this other party that's focused on doing whatever they can for everyone, you know, what's in the best interest of everyone. And I think it's not that Luke is totally self-centered, but, you know, of course he wants his wife back and his daughter back. She did try to explain to him in that tape that, you know, that she wasn't going to leave without Hannah.
Yeah.
And so I think he realizes that, you know, he probably doesn't understand, and, you know, maybe someone, I'm sure Rita can fill him in on why Hannah wasn't on that plane. You know, if June hadn't pulled all her crazy stunts when she was being very self-centered before she came up with this plan, you know, they probably could have got Hannah out in that group, right? It wouldn't have been that hard in the grand scheme of things.
It's tough because they just have to, it's, you know, just have to, she just has to do right and kind of deal with the consequences. And it's so tough.
And I think something else, and this is something that Fred said to Luke in the last episode, is like, Gilead has changed your wife, you know, and then he's like, I changed her. And well, I mean, that's partially true, but I mean, he's seen all, you know, he's seen June sacrifice herself to get that baby out so she can get Hannah back. he's seeing her get this, you know, these hundred kids out. And I'm sure for him, she's not the person she was. I don't think he ever would have expected something like this from her. Just like her mother kind of questioned, like, this is what you're going to do with your life. And I think he saw her in a very, you know, kind of vanilla way. She's just this, you know, kind of cute girl, and they get along, and, you know, she's just living a very normal life. And now she's doing things that are so completely unexpected and probably out of character for her. Like, not that she wasn't a good person before, but for her to kind of mastermind all this and make it go off successfully, you know, I don't think he ever would have thought of her in such a way before.
You know what, Gina, that's a fantastic point, because they have gone to lengths to show that June and even he too were in a sense oblivious to what was going on in the political realm, right? They were involved, and because of her mother, though she had almost a little bit of an aversion to paying too much attention to it. Right. And to taking part in that and to having an ownership in it. So it is, it's an interesting dynamic. And I just think that Luke still loves her so much and must, and he's proud, and he doesn't show anger. He's very sad, but he's proud that all the little girls have been saved, but it just continues on. And June continues on. We see that she's still alive.
Yeah.
She gets carried off. And you put a note too. The bullet must have passed through her. I was thinking that too. Like, she was there a while, so it can't be too bad.
Yeah. And she's grabbing her front, but it clearly went in through her back. So that's why I thought, oh, it just must have went through rather cleanly. It didn't have anything major because she hasn't bled out. You know, she had to have been there for probably a good 5 or 6 hours, depending on the time of year, you know, and kind of light changes, and, you know, all her peeps come to get her. It's the happiest I've ever seen Alma look. She's always so, you know, kind of bitter and snarky, but I think that's the first time we've really seen her smile. Yeah, she's still alive and closes her eyes, and I think it's safe to say that she definitely is still alive and yeah, isn't going to die. But that does kind of leave us to, you know, like, what do we think is going to happen next season?
I mean, again, I think that we're seeing the decimation of Gilead, and it's falling apart from the inside. And we see it in Lydia, and then what June has done by not only, you know, the amazing scene when she, I forget Christopher Maloney's name in this again.
Commander Winslow.
Okay, take it out, Winslow, which is a power structure, and Waterford's gone. And then you see that Lawrence is talking on the phone. What, are they going to bomb somebody? So I think they've done a kind of smart thing here, where at times we've seen, again, like, so much more this season, like when they were allowing Serena to be a part of the council for a little bit, you know, I mean, the first part didn't work out so well, right? But they were showing us the power structure, and they even had Fred talking about it to the women that were interviewing him in Canada. So I think there's a war coming, and I think that's what next season, I think there's going to be a war, and I think maybe we'll see Nick again, and I think maybe we'll learn about, maybe even Rita's kid, we'll get war flashbacks, and maybe we'll learn about the war that started Gilead, which we haven't really ever seen, right?
Yeah.
It can be juxtapositioned with the end. I think it's a good opportunity. So I think they don't know that June was a part of this. If they can get her back there, I think that they can help her out. And I think that by the middle of episode 1 or 2, we're going to be dealing with the fallout in a major way for this on an international scale, because remember, the one baby caused so much of an international incident, and they went on TV, which obviously backfired. And now they've taken they've kidnapped 100 children.
Yeah. Well, and there was an instant reuniting of a father and a child right there. And it's like, well, that is media gold. Like that is
great point. And you have and our heroes that are in Canada now all have different experiences that bolster the horror of what Gilead is.
Yeah. I mean, I kind of look at it and I think, first of all, I do feel like they're going to get June back. And she's, after this, within the Resistance Network, has reached a status level of Schindler, of Moses, of Harriet Tubman. I mean, she has become, if she was not important and special before, she's become so much more important and special now. And I think that people will be hiding her. I think they'll be hiding her and protecting her going from house to house, which is kind of why I think we probably will see Lawrence again. I think he'll be involved. We might even see that doctor that was played by Gil Bellows again. I loved him. I was like, why is he so comforting and familiar? And then I'm like, oh my God, it's Billy from Ally McBeal. He's still in Boston, even though he died of a brain tumor. You know, I think that we're going to see her protected by a group. They'll probably be more plotting and planning. But I also think that this group of people that really loves her, Luke, Rita, Moira, Emily, that, you know, and all these kids now are also going to be starting to be much more actively like, we need to get her out. I think it's all going to be about getting Hannah and June out next season and bringing down Gilead. I think there's going to be a few different threads going, and it's going to be super interesting. And I think, you know, you're right. We probably will see some people that, that change allegiances. You know, it's really hard to tell where Nick is at, with things. He didn't give information,
or what he's forced to do or write because of his past, or, you know, and then it comes into question, cool things, Gina, the politics of it. Like now that this could be a precedent we're seeing with Serena where, okay, you know, it's not so simple as, oh, Nick wants to be good now. He committed atrocities during a war and perhaps other people. And now we also know that it's not just Canada that's involved, but America. They're talking now about America. Did you notice that, or did I mishear that?
Oh no, yeah, they're talking about Canada and the Americans
So there's like another group here of people who may have been involved in that war that have a history with Nick, and so it gets so layered, and then, you know, it's just like, it seemed before like Canada wasn't going to help or they wouldn't even accept the plane, but they changed and we just have to kind of accept that.
Yeah.
So I love that about the show though.
Yeah. And we know the Swiss are involved too, right? This isn't just,
and we had the Mexicans came in season one.
Yeah. And we know that even if the leader of Mexico is trying to solve her own, fertility crisis down there, that her right-hand man is working behind the scenes with the Americans and the Canadians, because he's the one that initially got that note from June to Luke and let June know that her husband was still alive.
So
I think we're really going to start seeing them try and bring them down and figure out how to do that.
This was my favorite. I'd look forward to your next episode. You're going to talk about the whole season, right?
Yeah. I'm going to try to get that one done next week. But
because this was my favorite season, definitely.
Oh yeah. I mean, so much more hopeful and promising, and
it just broadened it. That's what I like. I want to know about the politics. I'm interested in Canada and how and if they're going to be. I loved the thing when they went on TV, right? I thought there was just so many aspects that kind of broadened this world and showed more of it. And they just took more with the characters grew. And finally, June, just that determination is showing. And I'm excited to see next season.
Well, and I think what's also going to be really interesting about next season is that this September, oh my God, that's like weeks away. I think it's coming out in about a month. Margaret Atwood's book, The Testaments, is coming out. And that's basically kind of like a sequel to The Handmaid's Tale, although supposedly not necessarily all the same characters, but that it's still somehow Gilead related. So I'm wondering how much of this book that's coming out has already influenced what we've seen in the second and third seasons, because really the first season was the original book for all intents and purposes. But then I'm wondering how is the book, The Testaments, also going to potentially influence like what we see next season too? And, you know, if it's testaments, is it from a bunch of different people that were in Gilead?
I see. She could tell, kind of have a different framework for the book, almost Game of Thrones style, where it's different chapters from people's perspectives.
I'm wondering if that's what it'll be like, because The Handmaid's Tale really is a full testament of this woman, June, and her time. And I think John and I talked about this a little bit, where he's listened to the audiobooks, and a lot of what she's doing is on tapes, the same way that June did in sending that note to Luke. So, I think it's going to be really interesting to see how that even helps expand this world. And I know that Atwood's been involved in working on things with the show too. So I think it'll just be so very interesting.
Either way, it's all good. There's book stuff, as we know from GOT, book stuff, good TV show, different worlds. Good to have both. And if they can in any way coordinate in some way to add to the experience, I think that would be fitting, because this show really does fulfill the promise of the novel in so many ways. And she should be proud of that. You know, it's not, they didn't make this into like a CBS NCIS, you know. Right. This is one of the best shows on television.
Yeah.
And I really thought they upped the game this season. Now, I told you my wife dropped out.
Yeah. Which episode do you recall?
Oh, man. It was like five episodes before the end, I think. She just was, you know, just with the current events as they are. And it was just hard to get. I think, you know, I told her, I said a little bit, there's some things which I think would have upset her even more. But I think I'm encouraging her to, when she gets the opportunity, when I take the kid out of the house, to say, sit down and watch the episodes, because I think it's worth it. Because I'd like to watch next season with her, which I think will be vastly different and will be a lot more propulsive, a lot more of the end of this rather than the drudgery that we experienced for so long, but which was necessary, I think.
Yeah. I mean, I think the episodes that that were the worst ones this season, I mean, it definitely kind of did like a tank and then it came back up. But that one when she was in the hospital, and then the one that followed when she was back home and they had to do the ceremony. I mean, and even kind of the one before she was in the hospital, there was just like really like downward spiral.
That was when she dropped. That was like I think that was the episode after she dropped off, maybe. I have to remember, but I remember at first I was like, you made the right decision, honey.
Well, yeah, because you're just like, they're just going to make us hurt again and again and again. And, yeah, I mean, I had a lot of doubts that June was going to be able to pull this off.
She did it.
Amazing. Well, any sister or Mr. Resisters of the week? I mean, I think it's pretty obvious who they were on the show. It was that whole mess of people involved with the plan.
In the show, yeah, people. And I guess, you know what? I would have to this. Yeah, the sisters are all all the great Marthas.
Yeah.
I have to give it to them.
Yeah. No, I think I do too, for sure. I'm not sure about in real life. I've been trying not to pay as much attention to the
action. I was going
to
say the same thing. I was going to say my real life has been Mindhunter, Veronica Mars, Bachelor in Paradise, and this, and my son and summer ending. So,
yeah. Well, thanks so much for joining me on this. It's great. Yeah, this is going to be a long episode. I might even break it up into two because I had some people send me feedback, some audio and written. So I'm just going to kind of read and record that later and see how it all comes together. But we've been on the phone for a couple hours now. So,
no, this has been awesome. I really appreciate it. I mean, I'm so happy that you did the podcast, and it's very much, it's part of the reason why this has been my favorite season as well, Gina.
Oh, yeah. Thank you. Yeah, no, it's something that I think I've been thinking about doing it for a long time. And then last summer when those Brett Kavanaugh hearings were going on, I'm just like, I have to do this.
For food in a world where many walk in hunger. For faith in a world where many walk in fear. For my family in a world where many walk alone. We give thanks, O Lord. Amen.
Amen.
Thanks for listening, everyone. That was such a great time I had with Gina. I want to thank Gina once again for having me on. Go out there, and I want everyone to rate, review, and subscribe Resisting Gilead. Gina did a fantastic job. Congratulations on your first season as a professional podcaster. Love it. Gotta join in the ranks. Once again, go out and rate, review, and subscribe Resisting Gilead. Peace out.